My orders are to set you all free.
Well, hell, Breck said. That's unexpected.
Lyra could only stare as the strange AI stopped before her, dropped to a metal knee, and slipped the key into her cuffs.
Chapter 11. Nor. Zen-Terra was dying. Queen Nor Solis had known it for years, had witnessed her planet's pain with her own eyes. But knowing the truth didn't make facing it any easier. For years, she'd known it was coming. She felt it in the tainted air she breathed, the sting of pollution scraping its claws against her lungs as she stood on the balcony of the Niota room, overlooking the once beautiful remains of her kingdom. She and her advisors had tried to restore beauty to Zen-Terra since the end of the cataclysm, but radiation had left the ground barren. Crops withered the moment they tried to sprout from seed. Streams dried up. Creatures became extinct, while others mutated, their blood becoming acidic, impossible to eat. Zen-Terra was once a prosperous planet, rich with beryllium mines that brought trade and wealth to the Olin system. But as more mines were exhausted and sealed up, the future of Zen-Terra began to look bleak. Businesses collapsed, trade between Olin and the other systems ceased as the beryllium ran out. Zen-Terran homes fell to starvation, which gave way to weakness, which allowed filth and disease to spread more with each passing year. Nor's father had turned to the other systems for help, but the unified systems refused to offer enough. And so the cataclysm began. Now, 15 years later, the fighting had long since ceased, but despite everything she had done, Nor was out of options. Until recently, Zen-Terra had been relying on food and water sourced from IV-21, a small neighboring planet. But IV-21's resources were far from sufficient to sustain the population of Zen-Terra for an extended period, and the limited food stores harvested from that planet had run out months ago. Death filled the void left behind. Mechanical noises hummed across the bustling city. From her vantage point, miles above the ground, Nor had an unobstructed view of the land. Black plumes of smoke billowed over the gray landscape, buildings ranging from a few stories tall to some towering miles high suffocated each other in the claustrophobic capital of Nivea. Flowers ceased to bloom, and real water was now a dream as artificial water tablets took its place. The burnt orange sky rained acid, the kind that burned both flesh and metallic skin. Nor grasped the railing as the ground beneath her gave a great shuddering breath. The quakes were near constant, cracking open the ground and devouring anything in their path. Her people used to mourn the lives lost to the molten crust, but over the past few years the quakes had become too regular for anyone to care. The Zen-Terrans were growing numb to the destruction around them. Nor heard the chorus of death in the cries of her starving people, saw it in the green fog that burned their skin as it swept its way through the crumbling city streets with each bitter gust of wind. For years, the suffering of her people, her planet, had torn her apart. But she knew, deep in her soul, that soon she would have the power to stop it all.
Your Highness?
Nor stiffened at the sound of a girl's voice behind her. She turned from her spot on the balcony, abandoning the view of her capital city and the pain it struck in her chest, like a poison. A cyborg girl stood in the doorway, patches of metal spiraling across her burned skin, a whirring gear where her heart should be. She was one of the few who had been saved from radiation exposure, even after it had done its damage. "You dare approach me in my private quarters?" Nor said. The wind howled in from the open balcony doors, whipping at her midnight waves of hair. "What is the meaning of this?" She smiled to herself as the girl took a step back and bowed her head, silver hair falling into her face. Nor had always loved the sound of her own voice, powerful yet pure, a voice that brought even the strongest, bravest men to their knees, a voice that could make heads roll should anyone speak a word against her.
"Apologies, Your Highness," the girl whispered. She cast her gaze down to her bare toes.
"Darai has called upon you, and—" Nor lifted a hand. The girl's words stopped at once. "Take me to him," Nor commanded.
"He is in his office, Your Highness. I will escort you there, if you should wish it."
Nor nodded once, and the girl turned, the gears in her metallic chest whining. Human, but barely so. She briskly followed the servant girl down the tapestry-lined hallways and into the elevator. They stood in silence during the 10-story descent, before coming to a halt at the floor that housed her advisor's office. Nor brushed past the trembling girl and swept into Darai's room, not bothering to knock. Stars winked at her from the inside. Hundreds of thousands painted on the walls, a replica of the sky that Zen-Terra had not been able to see for years. And in the center of the room, seated at his white desk, was Nor's most trusted advisor.
"You think so highly of yourself, Darai, that you dare summon me to your quarters?"
Nor hissed. She approached the pristine white desk.
"Apologies, Your Highness," he said, standing and giving her a deep brow, gray hair falling across his weathered face. Half of it was mutilated, skin shriveled and burned from a childhood accident, bits of metal poking through where permanent stitches helped hold the skin in place. He rarely spoke of the accident and never gave much detail in response to Nor's questions about it.
"What is the meaning of this?" she asked.
"I have news regarding the weapon. I just received word from Ecclesia that it is in the final stages of development."
Nor smiled, her mood lifting immediately. For years she'd been waiting, imagining the glory of her greatest creation, and now it was nearly complete.
"Then we should prepare ourselves at once."
Darai stood from his desk, his long robes sweeping behind him like a curtain.
"Nor, if I may suggest..."
"Speak your thoughts now, Uncle, before I grow tired of you."
His lips pressed together in a thin smile. He was a proud man, but he himself had taught her to wield her rule like a mighty sword. He'd been a part of her life for as long as she could remember. The only surviving member of her family, not by blood, but through his years of loyalty to Nor and her mother before her. Darai bowed his head and approached her slowly.
"The timing, of course, is of the utmost importance. We must remain patient to ensure all of the pieces fall into place before making our move."
"The final piece is already in place," Nor said with a wave of her gold prosthetic hand.
Seeing it reminded her of the past, the explosions, the loss, the need for revenge that empowered her. The past was what fueled her present. Nor turned away, her spiked collar grazing her jaw. Across the room, the painted stars glared back at her like devil's eyes.
"When we bring the galaxy to its knees," Nor said, a smile slowly appearing on her rouged lips, "I'd like to repaint this room with the blood of every man, woman, and child who has ever lifted a finger against my planet."
Darai swept across the tiled floor to stand at her side.
"My dear." His voice was slippery, as if drenched in oil. "When we bring the galaxy to its knees, you can paint the entire palace in blood if you wish it."
Nor closed her eyes and smiled. She could see it, taste it, and it pleased her.
Chapter 12 Androma. Andy crossed her arms over her chest, fingers digging into her biceps as she tried to keep her anger in check. She sat in the captain's seat on the bridge, staring out the viewport of the newly repaired Marauder and into the tracker ship's massive cargo bay. The internal damage had been a relatively quick fix, but it was the exterior of the ship that showed the most damage from their fight with the patrolmen. She'd make sure General Cortaz paid for that, too. Her ship wasn't a junker. She refused to let it look like one. Andy spun in her chair to face her crew, giving them each a once-over. No serious injuries, though there was a nasty cut on Gilly's collarbone and dried blood beneath Breck's nose. Lyra, graceful as ever, perched on her pilot's seat like a bird. Andy's heart unclenched slightly, knowing they were all in one piece. "Are we really going to go quietly into this job?" Breck asked, leaning against the entry door behind her. "This team is never quiet," Lyra said. "We slaughtered them. I'm still surprised they allowed us to keep our heads after that." Breck made a sound in the back of her throat. "I wouldn't be surprised if the general goes back on his word to pardon us after we deliver his son safe and sound back to Daddy. How do you even know he's going to keep his promise, Andy?" Andy grimaced as she watched the patrolmen outside in their perfectly polished boots, their pristine blue uniforms. "He made the vow." All the patrolmen out there had made vows, too, when they joined the Arcardian ranks. Several of them had followed Dex to their deaths because of those vows. The Arcardian vow was as binding as two souls becoming one. "He'll keep his word, as long as I keep mine." "Making deals with the devil," Lyra said with a sigh. "Whatever will we do next?" "Let me shoot the old man, Cap. We can swing over to Arcardius now and I'll make it quick," Gilly whined from beside Breck. Her red braids had come undone, and curls tumbled over her shoulders, making her blue eyes pop. "Then this will all be over. You don't want to go back to Arcardius anyways." She seemed to shrink back into herself for a second as she thought that over. "Right?" "No one," Andy said, glaring at Gilly over Breck's massive form, "is shooting anyone else. Not yet, at least." She didn't answer Gilly's second question. She'd already thought about it, imagined all the ways a life back on Arcardius could play out. Even with a pardon, it would never be the same. When Kaylee died, people had looked at Andy as if she were the scum of the planet. As if, by choice, she'd taken a knife to Kaylee's throat and slit it herself. As if she'd wanted to become a traitor. Pardon on the line or not, Andy knew she wouldn't be able to get herself and her crew out of this. Right now, they were boxed in like the blue cattle she'd once seen on a farming satellite. "I don't like it any more than any of you," Andy said, "but we don't have much of a choice. Our ship is in his hands, and he has an entire tracker full of armed guards surrounding this cargo bay right now." She tapped her red-painted nails on the armrest. "I don't doubt he'll keep the vow, but that's not our biggest concern right now. We're headed to the Olen system." "And this is Zenterra we're talking about," Gilly said. "We've never stolen anything from there. We've never even been to the Olen system, Cap." Traveling to Olen had become a fool's journey ever since the Cataclysm ended. There was still the peace treaty in place, preventing the massive Olen system, with its capital planet of Zenterra, from attacking the other unified systems of Mirabel. But those living in the Olen system weren't exactly friendly with the unified systems. Andy didn't blame them. It was a miracle anyone had survived the explosive final battle that took place on Zenterra in the final days of the war. "We can't think of it like that. If we do, we'll end up overthinking every move we make. It's just another job, a grab and go." But Andy had a hard time believing that herself. She'd been to plenty of dingy, destroyed places in Mirabel. Pirating had a way of drawing her and her crew to the darkest sides of the various planets and moons they'd visited. But if half the rumors she'd heard about Zenterra were true, then she had to be strong. If not for herself, then for her crew. Her past actions had gotten them into this mess. She had to keep them alive in the end.
"Whatever you say, Androma," Breck said. "If you don't mind, I'm going to take little Gilly here down to check out the new weapons. With the supplies the General gave us, we can make sparks large enough to destroy an entire moon."
"Go ahead," Andy said, "but I want you both back here before we take off." A selfish part of Andy wished General Cortaz hadn't been the one to give the gunners their new weapons. For the past several months, they'd been low on their most beloved supplies. She wanted to be able to provide for her girls, but so far, all she'd done was put them in danger. Andy sighed, knowing this line of thinking was foolish. Gilly was grinning ear to ear as she and Breck left the bridge, and as long as they were both happy with the new weapons, it didn't matter who actually supplied them. Lyra remained behind, watching Andy with those all-seeing adherent eyes of hers. They'd been together the longest, shared countless stories over bottles of fizzy cosmic cram until their eyes became as glassy as the stars. Andy would never forget the day she met Lyra at a fighting ring on Zerpro 7. They'd stood side by side, two girls intent on winning their bets. But the fights were slow that night, the brawlers not very skilled, and soon Andy found herself conversing with Lyra. "They should put me in the ring," Lyra had said, sighing as she leaned over the dirty railing, peering at the fight below. "You sound confident," Andy had answered. "I'm confident enough when it comes to fighting," Lyra said, "but flying is my true gift." They'd talked long into the night, and hours later Andy had offered Lyra a test run with her ship. They'd flown away from Zerpro 7 and never looked back. "You're not okay, Andy," Lyra said now. "I can see it as clear as Virilium, so stop trying to pretend that you are." Andy sighed, running her hand through her tangled white and purple hair. It was going to take her hours to work out the knots. "I'm fine." But she knew Lyra sensed the lie the moment it left her lips. "I'm just..." She sighed. "I need some time with my thoughts, Lyra." Lyra looked at her doubtfully, but obliged. "I'll be in my quarters if you need me." Andy watched Lyra leave the room before turning to look past the clear glass wall and at the inside of the tracker ship. Men in blue Arcadian patrolman uniforms scuttled around like ants as they finished their final checks on the Marauder. Andy was exhausted, both mentally and physically, the kind of exhaustion she doubted sleep could fix. For once, she wasn't positive what the next step would be, besides rescuing the General's son. Beyond that was an expanse of complete uncertainty. A death sentence pardoned, an entire planet waiting for her. But after all that had transpired and with the wounds she still held inside, could she ever really return? With a sigh, she picked up her swords and began tallying the day's kills. As she dug into the metal, Andy's thoughts drifted to the past. She wished, desperately, that she'd never been chosen for the Sacred Spectre position, that she'd simply become a regular soldier like her father. Her earliest memories of their time together were of training days, bruised fists and bloodied knuckles. "Fighting is in our blood, Androma. We will always defend Arcadius at all costs." It was because of her father's training that she so often wound up in the commandant's office after fighting with other students at the academy when her anger got the best of her. It was because of her anger that her parents put her into dance classes in hopes they would help soften her edges. And it was because of dancing that she'd met Kaylee. If she'd only kept quiet at the academy, hadn't made Kaylee laugh in their dance classes, hadn't invited her to eat lunch in her pod, their friendship would have never begun. General Cortaz would have never seen the bond they shared, the fierceness with which Andy defended Kaylee from the teasing of their classmates, the way she could so skillfully break a nose and slip back into the shadows without another word, how she excelled in every military class and received top marks in physical combat classes. It was a series of small choices that led to one large mistake, and because of it, because of Andy, Kaylee had died. The painful truth still clung to Andy after all this time. This ship and these girls were her only solace, and now they were heading into the mouth of hell. Gilly was right. This job was bigger than anything they'd ever done before. It was rare moments like these when Andy wished she had a simpler, easier life. If only she could believe that a pardon from General Cortaz would take the pain of the past away. But she knew, as well as the general did, that her future was destroyed when Kaylee took her last breath. "Hello, Androma Rosella." Andy whirled in her chair, lifting her swords and finding herself face to face with someone unexpected. Something, more like. Confusion riddled her brain before she put the pieces together.
She hadn't met many AIs in her life, though she'd seen them on the feeds years ago attending to the deep-pocketed aristocrats across Mirabelle. The AI's face was white like the snow-capped mountains on Solera. It had two eyes and a mouth, legs and arms, but besides that, it was absent any other humanoid traits. The AI's body was see-through, like the Marauder's walls, and Andy could see all the gears and wires inside, clicking and whirring silently like an old-era clock. AIs had been exceedingly rare since the Cataclysm ended 15 years ago, when they were outlawed across Mirabelle. The Olen system had weaponized AIs during the war against the Unified Systems, and if not for the advanced military tech developed by Nuveda and Tenebris to combat the AI army, the Unified Systems would have fallen. It wasn't until 6 years ago that the artificially intelligent beings had been integrated into society again, primarily as servants and errand-goers and mechanics, and sometimes chefs, which Breck had so often begged Andy to obtain for the Marauder. After staring at the AI for a few more seconds, a whistling from down the hallway pulled Andy's attention away. Dex strolled into the bridge with a smug grin on his face. "Oh, I see you've met Alfie," he said, looking between the two of them. "Alfie?" Andy asked, confused by the name. "It stands for Artificial Life Form Intelligence Emissary," the AI said, staring at Andy with those strange eyes. "But you may call me Alfie." He bowed slightly. Dex patted Alfie on the shoulder. "He's the General's. His job is to babysit us on this trip and report back to the big guy on Arcardius." "Wonderful," Andy said. "I've always wanted a babysitter on my ship." Dex crouched down next to her, lips level with her ear. "You know, you were a lot more fun 3 years ago." It was like he wanted her to kill him. She turned and immediately felt flustered when she realized they were separated by mere centimeters. He was so close she could see the pores in his soft brown skin, the deep brown of his eyes and the raised scar on his temple, a souvenir from a fight he got into with an ex-convict just after he and Andy met. That scar was nothing compared to the one she must have given him on his chest the day she stole this ship from him. Tenebrin Guardians were known for taking pride in their battle marks, but the scar she gave him, whether it still existed or not, was not one he should be proud of. It was a sign of his weakness, a disgusting reminder of how he'd chosen money over love. Her heart, the traitorous thing, fluttered for a moment like it used to when he looked at her. She used to love his eyes, the unspoken words in their depths, the feel of his skin against hers during their passionate nights. Now those thoughts made her cringe. She guarded herself against those memories, which were no longer part of a blissful present, but a hurtful past. "A lot has changed in 3 years, Dextro," Andy said calmly. "Now if you don't move, I'll give you a new scar, and this time it will be across your neck." He put his arms up in defense before rising, distancing himself from her. "Alfie, grab my bags, please. Let's get settled in." He glanced back at Andy with a faraway look in his eyes. The thoughtful gaze unnerved her momentarily, but then he smirked and said, "It's great to be back on my ship." "My records tell me," Alfie said, trailing after Dex, "that the Marauder belongs to Androma Rosella." Andy laughed in satisfaction as they disappeared. Dex. Even his name was poison in her mind. At another time in her life, Andy would have felt guilty for her coldness toward him. But that time was long gone. Now she was made of ice, too full of anger and regret to get close to him again. He'd betrayed her, and so she'd betrayed him. One shredded heart for another. She remembered the way Dex's eyes had burned, how the hilt of her dagger stuck out from his chest as he lay there, on that scalding, barren moon. It was the day she'd claimed the Marauder as her own, the day she'd claimed her heart back, too. Hearts were pathetic things, too easily broken. The bloody Baroness couldn't afford such weakness, especially not now that Dex was back at her side. "It's one job," Andy told herself. "You can shoot him out the airlock the second you recover Valen Cortas." She smiled at that thought, then settled back down into her seat, where she resumed her tallying. There would be another tally added soon,
accompanying the others on her blades. It had Dex's name written all over it.
Chapter 13 Dex 4 years ago. Dex hated coming to Ulveika during their annual harvest. It was a minor planet in the Stuna system, a place where the pungent smell of the dung of feathered Uven filled the air. Dex covered his nose and mouth with a cloth to suppress the odor, but it failed to block the nauseating stench entirely. He wouldn't be here long. All Dex had to do was check in on a suspected bounty who was rumored to be making some under-the-counter deals and take a few snaps of the evidence. If he caught the scheming bastard in the act, it would mean a load of Krebs and another constellation tattoo added to his body, another mark of his guardian status. If not, well, Dex didn't want to think about the look on Rhysith's face if he came back empty-handed. This was his opportunity to prove to the leader of the Bounty Hunters branch that he was more than just some 17-year-old student with stars in his eyes. He was a guardian, born and raised, newly adorned with the title he'd worked his entire life to obtain. Life as a guardian after graduation wasn't easy. You weren't offered free room and board or given a steady mission. You could work a desk job, damning yourself to a life of boredom while you waited to be called upon for something greater. Or you could be like Dex. Desperate to live in action, to collect riches, he had joined the Bounty Hunters branch of the Guardians in hopes of getting his hands on the worst criminals in Mirabel and placing them behind bars, to keep himself busy honing his skills while he waited for further orders. With the peace treaty between the Unified Systems and the Olen system, Dex guessed it would be a long wait before he saw any real action. He was just as good as any of Rhysith's other bounty hunters, better even. If this had been the Guardian Academy, he would have aced every skill test, dominated in the fighting classes, destroyed all the other ranks when it came to intel. But Rhysith didn't care about Dex's hard-earned title. Rhysith himself was a war hero, a retired guardian of the highest status. To him, bounty hunting was about proving your worth, catching a criminal prize with ease. Dex was determined to do so. Now, on his first mission, Dex wove his way through the crowds of people selling their goods in rickety tents. Some offered ripe sonata fruit, a rarity that only grew in the southern rainforests of the planet, while others hoisted chunks of freshly slaughtered meat on hooks, blue blood dripping into pans beneath.
"Drink the blood to find the woman of your dreams,"
an elderly shopkeeper called to Dex, her one eye twitching as he passed. It was pure purple, a shade that reminded him of the moons outside New Veda. Her eye twitched again.
"5 Krebs a pint, dear boy."
Dex laughed as he sidestepped her booth. "There isn't a woman in the galaxy who would put up with me." Her cackles trailed after him as he faded deeper into the crowd. All around him, laughter bubbled up like a wellspring. Music drifted through the air, the different songs sounding out of time, yet somehow it all wove together as if played by one hand. Despite its stench, this small planet was a place of growth and love and life, and somewhere in the midst of it all was his target. Dex kept his head on a swivel as he walked, searching for his target's telltale shock of red chest fur. Rhysith had said the Strom man would be here, peddling illegal brainworms. Striding past a leather maker's stall, Dex hastened his pace, boots gliding effortlessly over the rocky ground. He could see his target's shop in the distance, a ramshackle booth made of canvas and rusted metal poles. But as he drew closer, Dex frowned. The booth was empty, its owner nowhere in sight. Almost as if he'd packed up and left, knowing Dex was on his way. Rhysith had warned him about this, targets with their own informants too quick and too clever to be caught on the first try. Since the beginning of his mission, Dex had been imagining the moment when he'd reach out and hold a knife to the peddler's furry red side, whispering words of defeat in his pointed ear. That moment was now dead and gone. Instead, he strode over to the booth and slipped inside, kneeling down to inspect the dust-covered shelves nailed together within. Dex needed a sign, any indication of where the target had fled, but he was greeted with only dust and dirt. He'd have to come up with a new plan, but first he needed to trek back to his ship and contact his informant. Dex was just sliding back into the crowd when he felt it, a shift in the weight against his belt where he kept his bag of Krebs. Dex whirled, flipping out his blade and simultaneously wrapping a fist around the would-be thief's neck. It was a young woman. She had white hair the color of stardust, tangled and matted as if she'd just been caught in the midst of a storm. Gray eyes stared out of a face masked by filth and grime. Dex's bag of Krebs was clutched tightly in her fist. He snatched the bag away from her, but didn't release his hold on her throat. "Nice try," Dex said. "On any normal person, you would have gotten away with that." He'd dealt with street rats before, knew all of their tricks, and, as Dex tightened his hold on the young thief, he expected her gray eyes to well up with tears. He expected a kick to the groin, or for her to sink her teeth into his hand. "I could kill you with one twist of your neck," he added, waiting for her to make a move. Her eyes narrowed. It was his only warning that she was going to react before her body twisted. He felt her foot hook around his ankle, and before he knew it, they were on the ground. She held a small knife to his throat. His knife, which she must have stolen from his belt. "Impressive," Dex said. Then he shifted his weight and used his momentum to roll them sideways, where he landed on top of her, the knife discarded, twin snarls on both their faces. His pouch of Krebs sat several feet away, a few of the golden coins loose and glittering under the sun.
"Get off!"
the young woman said. There was no fear in her eyes, only a burning anger as hot as a flame. She tried to wriggle away, but she was weak. He could see now how frail she was, how her worn clothing hung from her frame and danced in the wind. Her wrists were wrapped in thick cloth and tied with leather strips. Dark stains, possibly blood, stained the material. She was too old to be a street rat, and too filthy to be working for a pleasure palace. The palace owners on Ulveca liked to keep their workers clean and enticing. A nagging in Dex's brain told him he'd seen her before, but he'd seen hundreds of people in this market today. Perhaps she'd been following him? Curious, Dex lifted some of his weight from her, but didn't let her go. "You should learn how to pick your targets more wisely." Her eyes narrowed, her gaze raking over his body.
"I should say the same to you. You don't look nearly strong enough to capture that dealer you were going after."
"You know about him?" Dex asked curiously. If he could get information from her, maybe he wouldn't have to contact his informant. He could avoid the digs from Rythus's other recruits and salvage the mission before it was too late. The young woman tilted her head, a slight smile pulling at her cracked lips.
"It's going to cost you."
Two can play at this game, Dex thought. "How about instead of my turning you over to the patrolman, you tell me what I want to know?" He had her there, or so he thought. She shrugged her bone-thin shoulders and laughed, an empty one, the kind that came from a person with little hope left in life.
"They don't care about me."
As Dex stood, pulling her with him, he caught the flicker in her eyes, a hint of fear as she glanced over his shoulder, as if she expected the patrolman to come running. What had she done, Dex wondered, to end up in this stinkhole? Beyond the grime, he could see someone chased by the ghosts of her past. Someone broken, but clever and quick enough to play at his games. Certainly a strong fighter, likely stronger when she was well-fed. He thought for another moment before responding.
"If you give me the information I need, I'll buy you a meal. By the looks of it, you need one."
She stared at him, eyes squinting as if trying to seek out an ulterior motive.
"I'll choose the place," she said finally. "And I want a week's worth of meals and all the Krebs in your pouch."
He paused. If it weren't for his pride, he would happily walk right back to his ship and contact his informant. But he had a reputation to uphold, so this seemed the better option.
"Half the Krebs," he said. "And if I find out you're lying to me, I'll kill you."
"That's the funny thing."
She smiled, but it didn't reach her eyes.
"I'm already dead."
Then she turned, fading into the crowd. Dex scooped up his pouch of Krebs and trailed after her, a nagging feeling in his mind as he wondered who she was. and who she used to be.
Chapter 14. Androma. It was staring at her again. "Are you incapable of blinking?" Andy asked. The AI sat across from her in the meeting room of the Marauder, where it had been since the beginning of their meeting. "Since I am not a living being, I do not require eyelids to block damaging particles from entering my ocular lens. This means that I am incapable of blinking, Androma Rosella." If the infernal AI hadn't belonged to General Cortaz, Andy would have unscrewed its head and pulled its wiring out through its neck. Instead, she turned to the second most kill-worthy member of her new crew. "Silence him, Dextro, before I do it myself." Dex tisked, shaking his finger. "Now, now, Androma," he drawled out her name. "You, of all people, should know how the General likes his little pets to be." Andy's fingertips flinched toward her sheathed blades. "What is that supposed to mean?" He held up his gloved hands. "Relax, Andy. I'm just trying to have a conversation. That's what people do." "I don't want to have a conversation," Andy said. "Not with you." It had only been a day since Dex took up residence on her ship, but it seemed much longer. Not for a single second had Andy been able to escape Dex's presence. The ship may have been small, but it wasn't that small. Yet no matter where she went, Dex managed to find her. In her room, where she pored over her photographs of planets, all the places she'd explored, he'd found her. He'd flipped through her classical music collection, then chuckled at the calendar screen flickering on the glass wall. The handsome models from all corners of Mirabelle rippled as he flicked through the images, whistling at each one. "So this is what you like, Androma," he'd asked, waggling his dark brows suggestively. "I guess I understand why you left me." "What do you want, Dextro?" she'd asked. "We need to talk." Standing in the doorway of her room, a half-smile tugging at his lips, he had looked for a moment exactly as he had long ago, when they'd shared this very space. She'd slammed the door in his face before her memories and her heart could unravel her. How he could make light of their situation, how he could simply come here and want to just talk after all that they'd been through and all that they had done, she couldn't fathom. But she knew that the moment they delivered Valen Cortaz back to his father, she'd be rid of Dex forever. "Your heart rate is increasing dramatically," Alfie's soothing voice sounded from across the table. "Do you require a moment to rest?" She required a lot more than that, but Andy simply shook her head and turned back to the task at hand. A map of the Olen system filled the air of the room, three glowing orbs rotating slowly around a single sun. To the left of Zantara, the capital planet of Olen, was a mass of gray. The junkyard, where old ships were cast out into the skies, left for traders to pick over. But more notably, where the last real battle of the Cataclysm was fought, the Battle of Black Sky. It was rumored that Queen Noor's father, the previous king, had sent hundreds of ships to fight, only to watch them fall from the sky as thousands of Olen soldiers died at the hands of the unified systems. The junkyard was the perfect place for the Marauder to disappear. Andy glanced up as the newly repaired door of the meeting room slid open and the rest of her crew walked in. The holographic map flickered as the girls walked through it, then bounced back into place. Gilly was preoccupied with eating a chunk of bread from dinner. If she had the chance, Andy thought, Gilly would eat all our food stores. Andy often wondered if her stomach was a bottomless pit. The 13-year-old was growing fast and had an appetite to match her growth spurt. The ship's system, memory, beeped overhead. "Incoming message," the cool female voice said. Alfie looked up, tilting his head sideways. "An artificial intelligence on the mainframe of a pirating ship," he said. "I have never observed such a thing." "We stole her on a job last month," Gilly explained. "Breck installed her." "Incoming message," memory said again. "For Dextro Ares." Dex stood, the legs of his chair scraping like a wailing ghost against the cool metal floor. "My informant awaits." They'd been going back and forth with different plans for hours, finally settling on one that pleased everyone, and, most importantly, General Cortaz. The general had his claws sunk deep into Andy's back, even from halfway across the galaxy. He'd already rejected several plans, which seemed to defeat the purpose of hiring Andy and her crew to do a job that he lacked the experience to carry out himself. Their short, often heated calls made Andy long for her days as a specter. Back then, he'd respected her, even praised her during rare moments when he'd let his general's mask come loose. She'd seen him through a soldier's eyes, trained to gain his approval. He'd given her the freedom to do her job, even allowing Andy to take up residence in Avaria so she could stay by Kaylee's side at all hours. How far she had fallen since then. Like it or not, General Cortaz had to bow to her will on this mission to respect her methods. She'd told him as much on their most recent call. "Bring him back to me, Androma," the general had said. "And perhaps I will." Now Andy and Dex had finally settled on a plan. Her crew surrounded the table as Dex left the room, Alfie trailing after him, saying something about conversing with his fellow AI. The girls waited until they were gone to speak. Lyra stood across from Andy, blue eyes searching her face. "You're looking a bit troubled." "I'm fine, Lyra," Andy said with a growl as she examined her chipped red polish. She'd have to ask Gilly to repaint her nails soon. "I thought you said you were going to keep Dex busy. He won't leave me alone." The pilot shrugged. "Dextro is a man with many talents, the most obnoxious of which is that he knows this ship inside and out." "That," Breck added, her massive hands curling into fists as she slumped back into a chair too small for her muscular frame. "And his little leech, Alfie, seems to always be 10 steps ahead of us." Gilly giggled and wiped breadcrumbs from her face. "I am going to lock the AI in the waste bay." Andy smiled at the thought. "The sooner the better. You could lock Dex in there, too." This was how it should be, just her and the girls making plans to strike it big, without a self-righteous, Krev-worshipping man on board. "We'll make our first move soon," Andy said, filling the girls in on the latest parts of the plan. She glanced at her second. "Lyra?" Lyra nodded and reached out to swipe a hand across the map over their heads, which was programmed to respond to her and Andy alone. Much to Dex's dismay, Andy thought with a smug smile. He'd asked her to give him access at least 12 times already, and she'd shut him down each time, with pleasure. At Lyra's touch, the planets on the map began to swirl, their muted colors deepening, the sun blazing bright as it spun around the room. Lyra tapped a black spot on the map, enlarging the space before using her fingertip to trace a glowing red circle around it. "That," she said, pointing to the circle, "is where we are now, in the junkyard." The Marauder was currently hidden within the large husk of a fallen warship. If anyone happened to come through this area, their ship would easily be mistaken as a piece of the larger one. That had been Lyra's bright idea, and the exterior damage the Marauder had recently sustained was helpful camouflage. She drew a line from their current location to Lunamare, where Valin was being held captive. "This is where we need to be," Lyra said, right before Andy took over. "The plan is that in 2 days' time, we will be meeting Dex's informant, Soyina Rombard, at the Dark Matter Pub, located just outside the security border of Zenterra." Andy tapped a spot on the map just to the left of Lunamare, where a small silver orb hung in the darkness. The satellite pub. "There we'll finalize the escape plan with Soyina and initiate the rescue. Dex and I will enter Lunamare while the rest of you head to the rendezvous point." Andy looked at Lyra, catching her in the middle of an eye roll. Her second wasn't happy that Dex and Andy were going into Lunamare without her, especially with the plan they'd come up with. High risk, possible reward, but it was the best option they had, and they needed Lyra to pilot the ship. Plus, as much as Andy hated to admit it, she and Dex did know how to work a job together. It was what first brought them together, and later tore them apart. They simply had to get through this without killing each other first. Andy swallowed hard and continued. "At this point, all we need is a map of the prison. Without that map, we'll be screwed. But luckily for us, our informant should be sending it to Dex as we speak." Soyina could be described as a shadow hiding in darkness with few records to be found about her on the galactic feeds. She was a tricky woman who had refused to let anyone but Dex see her face, which meant Andy had to go in blind when she met the woman in person. It wasn't an ideal situation, but she'd faced worse before.
I know I'm not the most experienced at this stuff, Gilly said from across the table as she polished her golden gun. But it all seems a little too easy. How do you know we can even trust this so-called informant Dex has? Breck barked out a laugh.
How can we even trust Dex?
We can't, Andy said. In her mind, she saw Dex's face years ago on Olveca, the very first time she'd met him. That sideways smile, his hand wrapped around her throat. His pouch of Krevs coiled in her fist. She should have known that day what he was, what he'd push her to become. Dex's trademark is double-crossing people, Andy continued. An old dent in the wall of this room was proof of that. Andy still remembered the brain-bashing she'd saved Dex from in the days they'd shared this ship. That's why I have a plan B.
And that is?
Breck asked, raising a brow. Well, ladies, Andy said as she leaned forward, face glowing in the light of the map. The stars rippled out and away from her touch as if made of water. I think Dextro needs to be taught a little lesson in the element of surprise.
Chapter 15 Valen. The hiss of the whip sang through the darkness. A crackle, a pop, and with it, the stench of singed flesh. The electric whip bit into Valen's skin, over and over, until he couldn't suppress his screams anymore, until his throat felt ragged and blood coated the floor like a warm, wet carpet. They were unraveling him, bit by bit. "I am Valen Cortas," he thought. But as the whip came down again, a crackle of blue that lit up the splatters across the stone walls, it drowned out his own voice in his head. His torture had begun 3 months prior, when he arrived at this prison. First with starvation. A hunger so deep he'd felt as if his stomach was shredding itself apart. Then came the questions, the beatings, and shortly after, the floggings. Since then, Valen had lost track of the times he'd been slashed by the whip or pummeled by the guard's electric gauntlets. If he sunk into the blissful oblivion of unconsciousness, they would bring him back with an injection, a prisoner to the horrors he couldn't escape. The cycle continued without end, until Valen thought the walls had grown claws that tore at him, until he thought he'd drown in his own blood, until the very mention of his home planet of Arcardius brought forth maniacal laughter from his lips. Home was nowhere, as he drowned in pain in the darkness of cell 306, a place without color or laughter or light. "I am Valen Cortas," he thought as the whip kissed his skin again, tearing at the tendons beneath. "Vengeance will be mine." More than once, he'd wondered if he had died and been dragged down to hell. But even hell couldn't possibly be this cruel. Hiss. Rip. Singe. On and on it went, until his mantra was replaced by something else. "Why are you taking it? Fight back," a small voice said in his head. Valen nearly laughed as the whip came down again, drowning out the voice. But then it came back, stronger this time. "Don't be weak like your father thinks you are. Fight back." How could he fight when he was nothing? How could he shout when they'd stolen his voice, when his body was too weak and too mutilated to move? Hiss, rip, singe. Then, as if right next to Valen's ear, the voice screamed, "You will never get vengeance if you allow them to have their way. You have to fight, Valen. Fight back." As if he'd been plunged into Arctic waters, a feeling radiated through him, something he had never felt before. A power, a want, a need. The crackle of the whip hissed overhead, promising a swift return. He couldn't take it. he wouldn't take it.
Stop!
Valin yelled. His voice reverberated against the room's obsidianite walls. He waited for the next slash, but when it didn't come, he craned his neck to the side. Even that slight movement sent a wave of pain through him, like he was being dragged across a bed of nails. His vision flickered in and out, unconsciousness tugging at him like a welcome friend. But what he saw puzzled him. His torturer, a large man with arms the size of Valin's torso, had paused mid-swing. The whip still crackled overhead, bathing the room in an eerie, flickering blue. Valin didn't have time to make sense of it before the heavy door groaned open, two soldiers standing guard. Between them, a robed figure glided in.
"Hello, Valin,"
the figure said, and Valin gasped as she drew back her hood. Dark ringlets fell across her shoulders, where a collar of ruby red encircled her throat. And her eyes, Valin saw, were a gold so bright that in his delirium Valin smiled and imagined painting them. She stopped before him, reaching down to slide a lock of hair off his forehead with a golden metal hand. The fingertips were designed to look like delicate claws. She was an angel of darkness, come to him in the pits of hell. When she looked down at him, her smile was as bright as fire.
Chapter 16. Androma. From far away, the Dark Matter pub looked like a glowing beacon among the stars. Beside it, a short ship ride away, was Lunamare. The prison moon was an inky black, the color of outer space, pocked with scars from asteroid collisions and impact zones from the cataclysm. But Lunamare had survived that war, a proud symbol of the system in which almost everything was destroyed. As the Marauder soared closer, Lyra guiding it effortlessly past the few ships that dared come out to this edge of the Olan system, the satellite pub revealed its darker side. There were entire sections missing, as if a giant mouth had taken a bite out of it, or a series of bombs had simultaneously gone off, ripping it apart from the inside out. Starlight shone through the gaps like winking eyes. It was a wonder the ringed satellite was still in one piece. Not such a wonder, though, Andy thought, that it's the perfect place to find Dex's little friend. "That can't be the pub. It's a pile of space junk," Gilly said to the crew as they looked out the Marauder's viewport. "Wrong, little girl. It has style. Things that have style aren't junk," Dex said, looking down at her. "That confirms my theory, then," Breck said from beside Gilly. Dex glanced sideways at her, raising a brow in question. "Since you don't have any style, you're clearly just space junk." Andy bit back a laugh and turned back to the view ahead of them. The landing dock was loaded with ships of all makes and models. Silver thrashers with tails like fish, perfect for carving through the stars. Ice blue indigos with four outspread wings like a giant bird. Then a rare beauty, a red recluse. Its sleek, burgundy frame could become completely invisible to the eye, not just radar. All of the ships were lined up like multicolored gifts ripe for the taking. Too bad they didn't have time for a joyride. It was prime time for Dark Matter, the end of the sun cycle. Everyone from bounty hunters to prison workers frequented the pub, according to Dex. Dex slipped up beside Andy to stare out the viewport. "We need to talk," he said. His smell was the same as it had always been, like Tenebrin mountain trees, fresh and strong. Her pulse heightened at his nearness, and for a moment, things between them felt like they used to. She took a step away, reminding her foolish heart that this man had been the one to break it. "We don't have time to talk, Dex," Andy said with a sigh. "We're landing soon." "That's exactly my point," he said. "We're about to go into this job together, and I'd rather go in as partners, not enemies." Andy turned to face him, arms crossed. "You and I will always be enemies," she said, her voice low. "You don't know the whole story, Androma." "I know enough." He huffed out a laugh and ran a hand through his mussed hair. 5 minutes, just 5 minutes, to let me say my piece. Andy opened her mouth to respond, but Gilly's voice filled the void between them. Cap? She bounded over, her hair freshly braided. It's almost time. Dex sighed. Later, he whispered to Andy. We're going to have that talk. Andy turned away as Gilly took her hand and hauled her back toward the waiting crew. This was the second time Dex had tried to talk to her about what had happened between them, and while she had no desire to revisit the memories of the past, she couldn't help being curious about what he had to say. She shook her head. Now wasn't the time to be thinking about such things. They had a job to do. Andy turned her attention back to the view of dark matter. She had never been here before, but she could imagine that if anyone found out a girl with her reputation was near, they would happily kill one another to turn her in for the biggest prize. She'd been on Mirabelle's wanted list for years, ever since she'd escaped Arcadius and taken up a life of pirating. Most didn't even bother looking for her at this point, because too many had already lost their heads trying to chase her down. But here, in a den of enemies, she was walking right into their hands. One would be stupid not to take a chance at capturing her. She tucked her hair beneath her hood, cloaking her face in shadows. "You'll keep a low profile," Andy commanded her crew. "Eyes on us at all times. You smell trouble, you see anyone step out of line, you sound the alarm and get the hell out. No mistakes." She glared sideways at Dex as the girls nodded. "No surprises." He crossed his tattooed arms and smiled. "I wouldn't dare." "He would." "Oh, he would." She turned away from him, biting the inside of her cheek to keep from saying another word. "Lyra?" Lyra sat in her pilot's chair, hands loosely gripping the throttle as she guided them closer to the docking bay. "You don't need to say what you're thinking. I am fully aware of what must be done in there." "Good," Andy said. "We'll have to move quickly once we get inside. No more than 40 minutes. "Plenty of time to raise hell," Gilly said as she bobbed up and down on her toes. Her golden gun was sheathed on her hip beside a belt loaded with handmade sparks. Breck had a matching one. The two girls were plenty capable of igniting chaos with them, if their past jobs were any indication. "Then we're all set," Andy said. A flutter of nervous excitement winged its way through her chest. It was quickly replaced by nausea as she removed her blades. Dex sighed as he removed his gloves and slapped them down on the dash. "If anyone messes with these while I'm gone..." "Nobody wants your disgusting palm juice," Gilly said. "What the hell is palm juice?" Breck asked. Gilly sighed. "Man sweat." "Where's Alfie?" Dex asked, ignoring their comments as Lyra eased back on the throttle and the ship slowed in response. "I need him to send a check into General Cortaz before we move." Nobody answered. Andy turned to Gilly, who was clearly trying to hold back a laugh. "Why are you looking at me? I have no clue," Gilly said. Andy raised a brow. Gilly smiled innocently back at her. "I'll just calm the general myself," Dex grumbled as he walked out the door. The Marauder angled toward dark matter, slipping through the liquid darkness like a weapon ready to unleash itself upon the world. Meanwhile, deep in the belly of the ship, Alfie sat alone in the locked waste bay, staring out at the stars. "Hello, Alfie," Memory said. "Would you like some company?" At the sound of her voice, Alfie looked up and smiled. Chapter 17 Androma. Andy had been in plenty of back-alley bars, unruly clubs, and pleasure houses that had more going on behind closed doors than what was expected. The atmosphere inside dark matter, however, had a particularly unpleasant feel. The metal doors screeched as they slid open, unleashing a thick wave of recycled air that smelled a little too much like vomit for her taste. The room was curved, the metal walls dented at random as if bodies had been thrown against them, leaving their mark. A rusted bar top, thick with stains of both the bodily and the brew type, stood in the center of dark matter. The patrons littered around it were all in different states of drunken disorder. Some of them slumped haphazardly on their stools, others shouting at the four-legged, six-armed bartender for a refill. She doubted they'd notice who she was even if she stared them straight in the face with her name tattooed on her forehead. Andy took note of the exits as they stepped inside. One directly behind them, where they'd just entered. The other was straight across the crowd, the dimly glowing red sign half-blocked by a bald man nearly triple Andy's height. No doubt from New Veda, a planet where the inhabitants were built like giants. Years